Welcome to beautiful Austin, Texas, and ESPN's F1 podcast. Unlap, Tyler Denning here. Nate Saunders, Lawrence Edmondson. Guys, welcome to my backyard. Welcome to the Lone Star State here in Austin for what should be a remarkable weekend.
Thanks, dude. Yeah, great to be here. I mean, this, I think Lawrence and I always agree, one of the best, if not the best, places we come to. Great city, venue's amazing, people are great fun. You took us down a rainy street last night, which is awesome.
You guys were already there.
We were already there. I mean, you just guided us in the right direction. But yeah, just a fantastic place to come. And I think if I could only pick one, if someone said you can only do one race a year, it'd be this one.
Yeah, and especially now that we've got two more races in the United States. We've got Miami, we've got Las Vegas, and this one just feels like a proper motor race. You know, it feels like it's for the fans. You get huge crowds here. I don't know what we're expecting this weekend, but it's always over 100,000, 120, 30. And it just has an atmosphere unlike the others. The others feel like they're for VIPs. They feel very kind of manufactured into these events just with huge spectacular light shows and this kind of stuff. Austin doesn't need it. It's just Austin. And I've been coming here since 2012, and the place has changed a lot, yeah. as you well know. But it still feels like home for F1 in the United States.
Yeah, we're at the iconic Austin Motel here on South Congress. But, you know, to your point, this is 11 races, I believe. It was Austin that brought Grand Prix racing back to the United States. What's your favorite part about coming to this race in this city? You mentioned the blue-collar nature of, you know, it really taps into the racing fans. But what do you like about the city? What do you like about the race?
I think the best thing about it is if you made a checklist of what is a great venue for a race, I think it ticks everything. The circuit's fantastic. The fans, I mean, the atmosphere over the last few years. And Lawrence is right. You know, we've had Miami come in, but I think it'd be very brave call for anyone to say that this place doesn't have a better atmosphere than Miami. You know, and you feel like it's a trip to Austin and it's a trip to the race. Miami is a bit far removed from there. It's just a great place. And I think what's great about it is there were years when Austin, we didn't know if it would stay on the calendar, mm-hmm. and it has got better and better. And Bobby Epstein, who's the head of the race here, has done a fantastic job. You know, F1's had this incredible moment at the moment in America, but the bedrock of it here is still COTA, and I think that's a testament to everything they've done there. Obviously, we've got Vegas coming in, but I think that's obviously going to be a huge kind of jewel in F1's crown for a little bit. But this one, I think if you ask a hardcore racing fan and a hardcore F1 fan, what's your favorite event in America, it'd be here. And I think that, I mean, the whole Keep Austin Weird thing I love. The first thing I saw, I went into a pub and there was a giant, like, rabbit or jackalope, I think it was, just
jackalope.
In the doorway there. And I think that Austin embraces that very well, but it embraces Formula One in the same way. So it just feels very authentically Austin. It's brilliant.
And let's talk about the circuit as well, because it is a really fantastic racing circuit. I asked Max Verstappen when we're in Suzuka, he did that amazing qualifying lap. A lot of that was down to Sector 1, which is just sweeping S's. I said, is there anywhere that compares? And he said, well, probably Austin. Is you know, that sector at the start of the lap here is the only thing that really kind of comes close to Suzuka. You don't have the jeopardy because you have big runoff areas, and that was one thing he noted. But otherwise, it is fantastic, and you get good racing. You get places you can overtake. We've seen fantastic passing on that double right-hander underneath the tower. I can't remember exact corner names now. But, you know, you get it everywhere. So it's a really cool place to come and visit. And I think the drivers appreciate that.
Yeah, and turn one is fantastic.
Iconic.
Well. Uphill. You've got that left turn. You've always got somebody forcing somebody else wide there. A lot of jeopardy into it. And you don't have that a lot of circuits. Sometimes turn one can be quite tame. So it really is. If you look, I know people talk about new circuits not being great, but this is one of the newer ones that really, it was perfect for racing. And you compare it to, I mean, people have looked at like the Vegas circuit to use that comparison again, and obviously they're constricted to what they can do there, but it doesn't look as good. So they've done a really spot on job with that.
I don't know if you guys walked the track. I've biked the track, and that run up to turn one, that is a steep uphill.
I've run it in my fitter days.
Very nice.
Yeah, and that hill, there's only one other place or two other places on the calendar that are as steep as that. Eau Rouge, obviously in Belgium, and then turn 3 in Austria when you go up the hill, and it's much steeper than it looks on TV, I've got to say.
And the downside with that, if you're running, is it's right at the start of your run, so you're destroyed by turn one. You just got another,
it's all downhill from there.
Another 3 miles or so to go. You know,
you think
about.
It's all downhill from there, then you get about halfway around, you realize it goes up again because it's
on that back stretch.
So you end up, you think you're going to have a second wind and it just kills you. So, that caught me out. I think you warned me about it before I ran a few years ago and I didn't listen to him. And I wish I had, like, coming up through the final sector, back uphill again. But it's pretty iconic.
Yeah, this is the race to be at. I think we would agree for U.S. fans, if you're new to the sport, just getting into the sport, if you want to come to a race, this is the one. You get a lot of those flavors of not just F1, but of the city. It all blends together. And to the point you were making earlier, it has some history. This race has been for a long time. You go back to 2012, Lewis Hamilton won here. Vettel has won here. They're great names over the last decade plus.
Kimi's last win as well was
absolutely.
Him? Yeah.
So make sure if you guys like what we're doing here, like, subscribe to Unlapped, and stay tuned to the ESPN digital channels, because you had mentioned the Coda Tower. We're actually going to ascend the Coda Tower, much to the fear of Nate and I here.
Yeah, that's
David, our producer's going to send us up there to bring you pre-race action.
Yeah, this could be as composed as I am all weekend. That's going to really test my fear of heights. But as long as we're not too near the edge, I think we'll be all right, right?
Yeah, that'll be the drama for us. Let's talk Lone Star. This season has had a Lone Star in Max Verstappen. But there's been tons of drama lately around Red Bull. Helmut Marko, Checo Perez. We're hearing a lot of big names that could or could not potentially be with Red Bull. What are you guys hearing? What's your take on all the noise around Red Bull?
It's a difficult one to actually make sense of, because on paper, Perez is safe. He's got a contract through the next season. Red Bull have said that publicly for as long as you can remember this season. They've said Perez is going to be there. But these rumors refuse to go away. And in Formula One, often with things like this, there's no smoke without fire. These things come from somewhere. And we mentioned it on the last episode of Unlapped. The tone around Perez has shifted slightly. It's shifted slightly over the past kind of three races. They were always very positive and saying, we know how good he is, etc. But Christian Horner in Qatar, when we spoke to him, he said, we're desperate for Perez to do better, because obviously they need him. They want him to get second in the championship. And you just feel that the tone is slightly becoming a bit more pressure filled for him. Obviously, they've got Danny Ric now, who's coming back this weekend. A lot of fanfare around that. He's obviously come back and has looked like his old self again. Liam Lawson's made that situation very interesting. There's a guy that, if they did promote Ricciardo, they've got a guy that could probably step in. So, I don't know. And there were rumors all over social media this past week.
Oh.
Not sure how valid those were, but it started.
Thanks, F1 Reddit.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it's always difficult to know, but it was a huge talking point, and it got a lot of people speculating about it. And I think the thing is, I think if Perez doesn't get second, it might be an open question in the at the end of the season. And if there's any team on the grid that's going to make a call that drastically and that suddenly, Red Bull have done it time and time again. So I think until we see Sergio Perez lining up at the first race of next season in the Red Bull, I think it's going to be something that at least feels like there's a possibility they could get rid of him before that. I still don't think they will, but you know, anything is possible. And given how bad he's been, I think you've got to consider it being a thing there. He's just not done himself any favours. So we'll see what happens.
I mean, you say there's no smoke about fire, but the fire's pretty obvious, right?
It's
Checo's result.
Yeah, the fire's burning.
It's a dumpster fire.
So until he sorts it out, and it has been said, and although it doesn't actually mean anything, but second place in the driver's standings, no one really wants to finish there, because obviously everyone wants to be champion. But Red Bull have never had a 1-2, their lead driver first, their second driver second in the championship, and they really do quite want it. So all those years of Sebastian Vettel and Mark Webber never happened. All of Max Verstappen's teammates.
It's really crazy to think about all the long history of Red Bull, never a 1-2.
And so it's something they're chasing. And at the moment, it looks like it could fall away from them, because Lewis Hamilton is... I think he's 25 points behind. He's gained 30 points the last three races or so on Checo. So, you know, he's closing in, and on this trajectory at the moment, with Checo performing where he is, it's not quite enough. But again, as we said previously, if he can't perform in Austin and Mexico, you know, Mexico's home race, that's going to be a big pressure point for him, I think. And it will be really telling to see whether he rises to it or whether he falls away.
Well, this feels like a home race for Checo Perez.
Yeah,
we are not far from Mexico City. So many fans come from Mexico up to Austin to support Checo. So he will have the full force behind him. You mentioned that tight race with Lewis Hamilton. He had such an opportunity, Checo did, in the last race with Lewis going out first lap. But Checo, bad luck, bad decision, whatever you attribute it to. But I would say for me, one of the most intriguing storylines this week is Checo Perez. He has one or two has to be in the cards.
I think you're absolutely right. And you're right. I mean, I remember 2021, especially the fanfare around Perez here was huge. It did feel like that home race for him. And yeah, I mean, if he doesn't do it here, Mexico, I think everybody's dream is that he wins that race. I mean, it would be, I'm annoyingly not going to Mexico next week, but I think Perez winning there could be one of the special
colleague kind
of moments. Yeah, Lawrence would be there.
Lucky man.
And I think that it goes without saying, when you're in Mexico, he's a superstar over there, you know, in the way that not a lot of people actually kind of realize unless you go there. So Lawrence is right. You know, if he can't motivate himself for these two races, if he can't get a performance, if you're Red Bull, you look at that and you think, well, when is this guy going to do it?
This is
and
it.
We've seen McLaren, you know, since Austrian Grand Prix when they introduced their upgrade, they're coming fast for, you know, maybe they won't get there next year, but that's got to be in the back of their heads. A full season of McLaren with their two drivers being consistent. If Perez is like this next season, that might open the door for something unexpected in the Constructors' Championship. So, yeah, a lot of things for them to think about. And, it's... I think you're right. That's the one thing a lot of people are looking at this season. And those rumors have probably helped sell the Austin race better than any could.
You talk other rumors, the other Red Bull drama, the power plays going on within Red Bull. Helmut Marko, who's always been kind of this figure within Red Bull, but having to be asked about his contract, coming out and saying, hey, I have a contract through next year. I saw in his interview he had given, he referred to Christian Horner as Mr. Horner. So what's your reading of the tea leaves amongst that dynamic? We know with Helmut, there was that relationship with DJ Matrosic that was going back to last year in Austin, that we actually had heard the news that he had passed away, but no longer there. Is there some power dynamics within Red Bull at a higher level right now?
I mean, there absolutely is, and I think there has been for a very long time. And sometimes that can work. That can have, you know, two sides of the team, as long as they're pulling in the same direction, more or less, is a good thing, and it can be a check and a balance. But it does seem like Marko increasingly, I mean, sadly, since Matrosic's death, has found himself in a position where perhaps he doesn't have the power, the backing, the guy right at the very top, looking after him, that they used to have. And and then there is a question, you know, if you look at the main thing that Marco's been tasked with over the years, which is the young driver scheme. Well, you look at it right now, we've got Perez, who was never a Red Bull driver, coming through, struggling as Max Verstappen's teammate. You've got Daniel Ricciardo coming back, having spent some time away, you know, leaving the whole Red Bull program. And you've got Yuki Tsunoda, who is really a Honda driver. That's the reason that he's there. Liam Lawson, of course, is impressed in the races he's there. But, you know, that's it. That's the tip of the iceberg of the Red Bull driver program. Now, they will point to Max Verstappen and say, look, you know, as long as we've got someone like Max, it's kind of like just filling in the other seats. But and I think that is the very other interesting thing, is how close Max is to Marko and the amount of power that Max has in that team as well, and his father Jos, and that whole camp. And they are very tightly knit.
They have been together going back to Max's early teen years. There's been a lot of loyalty. Actually, within that interview, Helmut Marko had made reference. He said loyalty still means something, but that relationship is going back almost two decades.
Well, right, and when Max made that decision to go with Red Bull, the other option was Mercedes and Toto Wolff, and they were
alternate universe.
Yeah, no, I mean, they had a number of conversations there. One, I think, was at Toto's house as well, and it got to a point. But the problem that Mercedes had back then is that they didn't have somewhere they could offer Max in Formula One. They only had one team, and they had Nico Rosberg and Lewis Hamilton driving for that team, whereas Red Bull could always offer Toro Rosso. And so I think, Marko at the time just looked at Max. He's like, we've got to get this guy. We've got to put him in a car. You know, he was testing it in Brazil sideways.
You think he was right?
Jury's still out, man.
He took a lot on that when Max came in. Max at the time, not even old enough to have a driver's license, but he took a lot of heat from that, from other drivers, from other team principals. But I think he was right.
I think so. And Lawrence is spot on with all that. And actually, when you look back to what was happening at the start of this year, you can see the power dynamic in play. When Nyck de Vries was out at AlphaTauri, it was very telling that Marko said quite specifically, like, Christian Horner wanted this guy in.
I did not.
Yeah. And I did not want him in. And, you know, I've been proven right. And I feel like you look back at that now, it's almost Helmut kind of reasserting his authority there and saying, look, I still know what I'm doing here. You know, whether that's right or not. But that was an interesting thing to throw into the mix. And as soon as De Vries started performing badly, Marko was very anti him. And the Ricciardo thing is interesting as well. I wasn't completely sure how pro Ricciardo Marco's been. him coming back. I feel like he's felt maybe there's a threat there internally if they put him back to Verstappen again. So that might help Perez in the long run. But yeah, Marco definitely scrambling around a bit to protect himself, and he hasn't done himself any favors with the comments he's made. Obviously,
no.
You know, had to apologize a few weeks ago for comments about Perez. And that's the biggest issue for Red Bull from a marketing point of view is after every race.
There's a Marco, bigger brand at stake.
Absolutely. And Marco, I mean, we've seen it, haven't we? After every race, basically, he holds court with every German journalist he can find, and he'll just say something outrageous. And that works if you've got the backing at the top, but I don't think he has that now. And it's a lot easier if you make a rod, you know, for yourself to be removed. So that's going to be one to follow. And I think, to be honest with you, I think Red Bull without Marco, it's hard to imagine that happening, but it's much easier to imagine it happening now that Mateschitz is no longer around. So I still can't see it happening, but there is a lot going on behind the scenes at Red Bull, and I think that Marco is right in the center of it.
Yeah, we should all should clarify this a bit, because I remember when Mercedes were dominating and basically journalists were running out of stories at the end of the year.
Yeah,
there was
looking for something.
We ought to have something to talk about.
There was one that was planted by a rival team principal. You probably guess who. That Toto Wolff and Niki Lauda had fallen out completely and they were no longer talking and the team was in disarray. This would have been about 2017, 2018.
Who was that?
Who would spread a rumor like that?
So we've anyway. Seen this play out of the playbook before.
Yeah, right? Exactly.
Just on opposite sides.
The next day, Lauda and Toto walked into the paddock holding hands. Had a bunch of photographers lined up. And and so, you know, these things do pop up a little bit when there's not stuff going on. But there's no doubt. And, I think even, you know, everyone at Red Bull is fully aware of it, that there is and always has been this power struggle between Christian Horner, team principal, and Helmut Marko, advisor, but someone who's calling a lot of shots at that team.
Mm. All right, handicap this thing before we move on. Next season starts. The probability that both Checo Perez and Helmut Marko are still within the Red Bull team. Is this 100% guaranteed, or where are you at?
Nate?
I'm not 100% guaranteed on that at all. I think it's much less likely Perez is there. But the both of them, that's a great question. I don't know about handicap. I'm not sure what what figures to use. Odds? I'm not very good with odds. I never gamble for this reason. But I would say 50. Let's go with probability.
If it was a weather forecast, would you say probability, high probability?
Rain? I would say low, high to medium probability. I don't know if you'd make a good weatherman. This is the only thing I can do. This is it, and you're seeing why. I think. The smart money still says that's going to happen, but there's doubt. There's doubt in that equation, definitely.
If Checo finishes second, do you think the whole band's back together, run it back?
I think there's still a huge amount of pressure, but remember, it's 1 year that they can run out on that contract. And I think, their big question is what's McLaren bringing? What can they build from what they have? But also what are Mercedes and Ferrari doing, knowing that both those teams are going and kind of almost ripping up, you know, what they've got and starting again. Now, if they make huge gains over the winter, then Red Bull could be in trouble in the constructors next year if Perez is performing on this level. I still think that Red Bull are going to have a big enough advantage to make that work. Mm. And then, you know, they can look into the driver market for 2025, because next year, 2024, I mean, if you put Daniel Ricciardo in that seat, look, you know, I'd love to see Ricciardo given another shot right at the front, but I'm not sure he's actually ready right now to go in there. I think he'd be much better off
against this version of Max Verstappen.
Exactly.
Wow,
he's asking a lot of anybody. He struggled already, you know, back when they were teammates. So I'd much rather see him get a full season under his belt at the junior team. That would be the more, you know, sensible thing to do. Then you make a call. Plus, you have all the other options coming up. You know, the likes of Lando Norris run out of contract at McLaren, and so I think, you know, there is still some sense to keeping Perez there. But, yeah, it's all about how big a buffer Red Bull are going to have next year. And they won't know that until testing starts, and then they'll start to get an idea.
Passion, drive, and patience. What brings home the winning trophy is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. From superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has got you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to turn your car into the MVP and bring home that win. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
Tired of ads interrupting your favorite sports podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music, included with your Prime membership. Amazon Music offers the most ad-free top podcasts. Enjoy shows like First Take, Pardon the Interruption, and The Low Post, available ad-free and uninterrupted. To start listening, download the Amazon Music app or go to amazon.com/ESPN Pods. That's amazon.com/ESPN Pods to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Let's talk next year. We're going to preview this weekend to close out the show, but we already know the results for this season. Max wrapped up the drivers. Red Bull has already wrapped up constructors, but we've seen McLaren, to your point, make phenomenal gains to the point where they felt, Lando felt, hey, we could have won two races last time out in Qatar. Mercedes and Russell said, we felt we had the pace. So when you look towards the remainder of the year, we've already seen Ferrari, the lone team that has broke Red Bull's streak. But who is their toughest competition moving forward for next year? Or should we expect more Red Bull dominance?
Well, I think you'd have to say McLaren right now, just the trajectory they've been on, the fact that the concept went towards what Red Bull have done. It's the whole, if you can't beat them, join them type thing. They've got two great drivers there who are, I think, Piastri is getting the most out of Norris. But this is where going into next year are in a really great position, because you've got three teams there, and they all, you could make a case for all of them being being the one. Obviously, the caveat to it all is Red Bull are also making gains on their side, and we know they're a pretty damn good team. But I don't know. I mean, I would say McLaren at this point, but, you know, Mercedes, they're really stung from where they've been, you know, and the struggles they've had this year. Lewis Hamilton wants that chance to win that eighth and beat Max, to like take a title off of Max after 21. So I think if you were putting it in order, it'd be McLaren, Mercedes, Ferrari, but Lawrence might have a different take.
Yeah, I'd actually put Mercedes ahead of McLaren, because they aren't that far apart from each other at the moment in terms of performance. But Mercedes have a bunch of stuff on this car locked in, just in terms of the way the chassis is designed, suspension pickup points, all sorts of stuff that they cannot change, because you know, changing a chassis mid-season is one, extremely expensive under budget cap, and even in under non-budget cap seasons you'd rarely do it. So they know a bunch of stuff that they can get, and they've also learned this year, just from adapting what was a fundamentally flawed starting point, they've been able to unlock performance as well. So they're pretty confident that once they can change some of those bigger jigsaw pieces and get those in place, they're going to make a step. Now, we've heard that before from so many teams in the history of Formula One, and it hasn't quite happened. But that's why my feeling is that, you know, next year, especially with just the resources and what we know that team can do versus what, I mean, what McLaren has done is very, very impressive. But I feel like McLaren is probably closer to its ceiling. And also, they seem to have followed more of a Red Bull route. I think we're going to have a lot of cars looking like the Red Bull, but McLaren have done that. And when you're following a similar route, when very similar parts of the car are coming on, body parts are coming onto the car like four or five races later, you're always four or five races behind. And I feel like McLaren might struggle to close that gap, whereas the likes of Mercedes and Ferrari have made some big gains with their car, you know, just because of the size of those teams and the resources. I feel like actually going into next year, if I was going to put money on it, my money would be on them. I'm not going to give you odds, but my money
Mercedes
would be on
Mercedes' new floor this week? Is that what I read? Is that what I heard?
I'm not sure. I haven't seen.
But breaking news. You know how the internet can be.
Quite possibly. I mean, the only problem is now is that if you're bringing parts to the car now, you're limited gains, you know, because you've only got, you know, these handful of races left.
Five races.
There you go. Slip of mind there. But yeah, five races left. And so, you know, what you bring there, you know, unless you can directly transfer that onto next year's car, that development time and everything is actually better put just straight into next year's car. So I think the only one which we know is going to be a big change is Haas. They're bringing a pretty substantial upgrade, but that's because they've kind of got a little bit caught behind in the nature of their team and farming bits out to Dallara to produce. That's just where they've ended up. So I'd be surprised if Mercedes have a major upgrade, but yeah, there's always little tweaks and stuff, and they'll learn from that, and that will all be going with a view to next year.
And Lewis, he was very direct about it. He set the team, he set Mercedes, that we have to have the best 6 months development we've ever had since I've been here. And I think that shows you where his expectation level is at. And given Mercedes history, you would back them to have that to have that kind of off season. Just on Ferrari as well, Lawrence is absolutely right. They've been in a better place. I've been really impressed with, if you compare Ferrari 12 months ago, the strategy is much better. The operation seems a lot better.
So the drama is down. They've turned the drama meter down.
Way down. And as you mentioned, they're the only team to beat Red Bull this year. Mm-hmm. So I think there's still a bit of a wild card in that mix, but things are much better there overall health-wise than they were. So I think if they can get themselves back in that position, Fred Vasseur seems to have steadied the ship quite a bit. So I don't think we can write them off at all at this point.
Is it crazy to think that we're going on nearly 2 years now, almost, since Lewis Hamilton won his last race?
Yeah, that is insane. I mean, if you'd said, I mean, that's the crazy thing. Abu Dhabi, when he lost that championship, if you'd said Lewis Hamilton, the last race was Saudi, he won't win for two more years after that, it would have seemed him.
And in that time, technically, Max has won three titles.
Yeah, so
he won 21, obviously, after Lewis' final win. And 22, and now 23.
Someone pointed this out as well. If you'd gone back to the 2013, I think it was the Spanish Grand Prix that Fernando Alonso won. If you'd said, by the way, Fernando's not winning for another 10 years, can you imagine what that would have felt like at the time? But it shows you how quickly things can turn around. I'm convinced Lewis is going to win again, but the way things are in Formula One, he might not. And that is crazy to think.
With Lewis, is it a Lewis thing? Is it a Mercedes thing with the car? Is it a combination, a little bit of both? What has it been?
Well, I mean, the reason he's not winning, it is the car. Like, if you put Lewis in a Red Bull, I mean, I'm not saying...
We had this conversation last night, yelling at each other over the music at the bar.
That's right. Yeah. I wonder what you guys were doing at that point.
It was preparing for this.
Nice.
So while you were going down the slide.
Yeah, that's right. I was definitely having the better time at that point.
It's a B-roll of hula hooping.
Yeah, we have videos. Yeah.
Continue.
Where was I? Okay, I just can't think of anything else than Nate
Lewis Hamilton.
So if you put Lewis in a Red Bull, or let's say all of a sudden Mercedes are at Red Bull's level, then of course he's going to win races. So it's definitely a Mercedes thing. But you do wonder with Lewis, you know, I mean, Qatar was maybe a bit of a one-off example, but that's not the kind of mistake you usually see Lewis make. Where we really did cut across his teammate. He's usually a very fair racer, gives space. And there's been a few kind of like little lapses. And I do wonder whether it's just the frustration of not having the car capable of going there and winning, which he's had for so long, all those years of dominance. And then it's kind of been taken away. And yeah, I do wonder whether that's got to him a little bit.
Tell me a little bit what you guys are reading. You guys are in the paddock. You guys have your sources. What does it feel like with Mercedes? It feels like there's some tension there and that the pressure has ramped up. We saw it culminate with that first lap incident. Then we saw the PR machine kick in and Mercedes tweet out the video of Lewis Hamilton apologizing. He took accountability for it, but it feels like you have Russell, who is very eager to go into that next phase of his career, which is potentially contending to be a champion. And you have Lewis Hamilton, who is very much not wanting to be put out into the pasture of his career. Nico Rosberg, who has been at the midst of that, has been out publicly and said that Russell needs to assert himself more. What's your read right now internally? What's going on with Mercedes?
It's a bit of deja vu, I think, a little bit to Lewis's first season at McLaren when with Fernando. And you get this every so often when you put a great driver with a very promising young driver. And just to quickly flip it back to Red Bull, one of the things that, as much as Perez's situation is a headache, they've not had to deal with their drivers crashing out of races and taking points off each other. They've got a driver who's losing points, but he's not costing the team points with both drivers. Mercedes have a completely different problem, maybe a good problem to have. I think it's one McLaren will end up having, where you have two drivers who are convinced they're better than the other one. You have Lewis, who, as I agree with what Lawrence said, you know, I think we have seen some maybe cracks in Lewis's armor, you know, over the past year or so, just from that pressure and that frustration of not being where he wants to be. Russell clearly thinks he's a future world champion. I agree, if he gets the car in the right place. So that together is a really difficult thing to manage. And, you know, Lando and Oscar Piastri, I think, you know, if McLaren keep going well, eventually they're going to go into a corner at the same time and want the same bit of road, and we know what happens there. So I think there is tension. I do think that Lewis and George, there's a fundamental respect of each other there at the moment, that we saw Lewis go and apologize to George after the incident in Qatar.
How quick can that go sideways?
It can go sideways really quickly. And I think the key ingredient at the moment is they're not fighting for a championship. As soon as you put that in there, as soon as you have Lewis v. George and Red Bull, where there's a championship at stake, I think all that stuff goes out the window, because ultimately, as much as these guys are teammates, they're all drivers who want to win the championship. And that, I think, supersedes everything else.
No windows in Formula. It'd go out like a visor tear off. You know? What's your take on Mercedes?
No, that's right. So it's if there was a championship at stake, I think we'd have a very different vibe between those two drivers. But fair play to Mercedes for doing that, because not every team will put two top level drivers in together. And you know, that's very much a decision that gets made at the top. And it kind of almost creates a vibe around the whole team and what they want to do with themselves. I think the other thing that Mercedes has struggled with is that for years they had this no blame culture. So if something went wrong, they didn't blame the person, they blamed the issue, and they found out how to get around it and
that's no fun.
Engineer their way out of it.
Not from our perspective. Well,
But it's also very easy to do when you're winning. You know, when you're winning championship after championship, it's very easy to blame the issue and not the person. But then all of a sudden, when you know you are a sizable chunk off Red Bull, a team which you know only 2 years ago, 3 years ago, that you know they were fighting for championships with, there's a lot more pressure, and the vibe does change within the team significantly. So it's a real test of that culture to see where they can come out of it. And the more years they spend in this kind of wilderness, just somewhere in between Red Bull and the rest of the field, I think you know the more difficulties they're going to have maintaining that.
And managing it is key. You know, even if you look at Mercedes with Rosberg and Hamilton, that was difficult. You had Horner struggle to deal with the Verstappen-Ricciardo issues, and that obviously eventually led to Ricciardo leaving the team. So it really does complicate things internally. And I think that, again, sorry, I keep bringing this back to Red Bull, but that's where the discussion of Red Bull's second driver is interesting. Red Bull have talked about before getting Lando in there, but I wonder, do they want that? They've got Verstappen in there. We know how Verstappen has kind of treated Perez. You know, he wouldn't even
give
him...
Good enough to win the championship almost.
Yeah,
on his own.
Yeah. I wouldn't move over to give Perez fifth position at the Brazilian Grand Prix. Yeah. So, like, how's he gonna react to having a very, very good driver or a world-class driver alongside him? Sometimes, some drivers, you just think, look, we don't need that dynamic. So, it does come with its flaws, but I think that if that's actually... I think it supports Lawrence's point that Mercedes are right up there because they have two drivers who I still think if you were to strip the car away and just said who are the two best drivers, the best driver pairing on the grid, hard to say that it's not Mercedes right now.
Max Verstappen, he may disagree. He talked about McLaren what they have. So that takes me perfectly into the question. You guys have been around this sport for a long time. Is this as good of a driver's grid as we have had in the sport going back for a while? It just seems like you look up and down the grid. Look at Williams. You have Alex Albon. We were talking about last night. There's a name that, I would love to see him in a Red Bull and see what he can do. But up and down the grid, it feels like there's not a lot of weak links out there.
No, there's really not. I think, you know, that has been noted this year compared to previous years. There's, you know, there were stages when we would look at the teams towards the back of the grid, and this is in the last 10 years, and you'd look at the two drivers and it would just be the amount of money they could bring into that team and the sponsor they could bring with them. You know, Pastor Maldonado brought money from Venezuela, for example, into the Lotus team when that was struggling. And, you know, that incident after incident like that, and you know, while some of those drivers were still very good, and people often bring up the example of Niki Lauda, well, he was a pay driver when he first came into F1 because he raised money and brought it in, but still, yeah, you know, you inevitably end up with lower quality driver. Whereas now, I think with the success of Formula One, the stability of the teams relative to where they've been previously, they can now go out and pick top talent. And if you look at someone like Logan Sargeant, I mean, I think Sargeant is actually a very good driver compared to other drivers we've had in the last 10 years. You know, he is decent, but he's been shown up a bit. And Williams haven't renewed that contract yet. They haven't confirmed him yet for next year because they do seem to have that flexibility to decide. And if someone like Felipe Drugovich, who won F2 last year when Sargeant was racing against him, so, you know, beat Sargeant to that title, if he can be unlocked from Aston Martin, then he could be a viable option there. So, you know, the fact that a seat like that, where previously a team like Williams would probably just be going for whoever could bring the most money, they're now actually sitting back thinking, who's the best quality driver we can put in there?
I'd have to look it up. It's in my phone, but maybe one of you knows it off the top of your head. If Sargeant were to be brought back, it would be the first time that we had every driver back, going back, I believe, over a decade plus.
It's not happening in a long time.
No rookies. We were looking that up, and we were really struggling to find them.
People get so geared up about silly season and whatnot, but we could have that port over. So answer my question first before I have one more question for y'all. But as strong as the grid's been in a long time?
Completely agree. And I mean, to use a different, probably the other driver on the grid who's struggling away from Perez and Sargeant, Stroll. You know, Stroll, obviously, if you look...
Talked about that last night, too.
We did. But, I mean, Stroll, to his defense, there's been points in his career when he has looked okay. You know, there's been flashes from him. The problem is now, I don't think you can be a driver that shows flashes. His issue as well is, obviously, he's at a team where his dad owns the team. He's come from a lot of money.
A lot of drama there last week, too.
Absolutely.
The
but I think
heard around the Formula One paddock.
But it wouldn't surprise me if you put Stroll into a different series and he was competitive. I don't think it's a case that Stroll is in there. I'm not sure if Stroll deserves to be in the seat he's in. In fact, I say I'm not sure. I don't think he deserves to be in the seat he's in. But that doesn't mean he's a bad driver. And Lawrence is right. I mean, there used to be days when we had, you know, Max Chilton and stuff, and you looked and you thought, is this guy really, you know, I mean, led the Indy 500 for a long time when I went to watch that, but I think he's found his level more away from Formula One. The driver market has actually been fascinating because it feels like it's all simmering to next year and 2026 when obviously there's huge changes. And I think that teams really have an abundance of options at the moment. I mean, even if you look at Haas, they've got Kevin Magnussen, Nico Hülkenberg. Might not be the flashiest driver pairing, but that is a solid lineup now in Formula One. And a lot of teams, you know, 5-10 years ago would have done anything to get that kind of pairing into the team.
The only slight problem now is that it's so hard for rookies to come through and basically get seat time in a Formula One car because we've got so many restrictions on testing. Okay, they've opened up first practices a bit, but still, it feels like drivers in F2 to really show what they can do. You know, if you look at Lewis before he started at McLaren, he got more testing mileage, I think, any other driver previously, because testing was pretty much unlimited back then. Yeah. And so that does create a bit of a barrier, which I think is why we have some of these slightly older drivers. But with that does come a certain quality and standard. And yeah, it's definitely up there.
Hi, this is ESPN's Mike Greenberg, and ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sports book of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today, and new users get $100 in bonus bets for making any sportsbook bet. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at armorall.com. Armor All, less work, more clean. Terms apply.
Yeah, we've heard a lot of news recently about the F1 Academy. When you talk about younger drivers, we heard Lewis Hamilton come out. The big word's been dilution. You talk about the driver pool here in America, potentially putting another team on the grid, the potential to add two more drivers on the grid and give an opportunity to two more drivers. Everybody seems to have a take. Andretti on the grid. What's your guys' take?
Well,
for or against, yes?
Oh, massively for it. I think it'd be great for Formula One. I think that, you know, everybody who grew up watching Formula One in the 90s and 2000s, you were used to big grids. The difference then to now is that a lot of those teams would come and go very quickly. Yeah. They weren't the most solid.
They'd be there 1 week and
yeah,
on the next.
Quite sometimes
then
quite literally.
Austin, I believe, what was it, 2013?
That's right. Yeah, yeah.
The two teams had gone into administration.
Yeah, and
here we are.
My first season covering it, there was, you know, teams literally just disappearing at the end of the season. So I mean, you know, that's one of the concerns the team have. But being in Qatar, this was the big talking point 2 weeks ago. And the teams, fundamentally, they don't get a vote in the Andretti situation. Obviously, the FIA has put Andretti forward and has said, we think they have everything they need to be a long-term team on the grid. The F1 teams don't get a vote in that, but they're very opposed to that. And I think that's shaping F1 management's kind of opinion on that as well, because there's still a very lukewarm feeling on this. So motorsport.com, I think, did a survey, a fan survey recently. 83% of fans said they wanted to see an 11th team on the grid. So at the moment, you've got teams very much against what a lot of fans would say is in the best interest of Formula One. You know, it's more eyeballs. It would bring General Motors and Cadillac in, not as engine builders, but as a partner and as a serious
still
partner
a very
to a team.
Big name to have.
Absolutely.
Attached to the biggest portion of motorsport.
Yeah, and in a season when Audi's also coming in as well, and we've got Ford coming in with Red Bull as well. So a time when Formula One's welcoming all these things in. Very difficult to see this situation and not actually agree with what Michael Andretti said, quite clumsily, because it didn't really endear him to F1 teams, but he said the other teams were basically against him because of greed. You know, he said they're trying to protect their bottom line. They're trying to protect their teams financially. And at the moment, it's difficult to disagree with them on that. So,
as the sport continues to add more races.
Yeah, and I would love to see it, but at the moment, it seems very unlikely that's going to be the case. But I hope I'm wrong. But yeah, that's what the sounds in the paddock are anyway.
Thumbs up, thumbs down, where you at?
Look, in principle, I'd love to see an extra team on the grid. I'd love to see Andretti on the grid. But I think there is, you know, there is something to be said about making sure that all the numbers add up. And that with the amount of money that is floating around in F1, and also with predictions that aren't based on continuous growth that we've seen, you know, in previous years, if it does flatline a bit, I mean, if Max continues to dominate, then there's going to be less eyeballs watching F1, less money coming into it. And so I think you do have to be a little bit careful to make sure that you have healthy teams, because we talk, go back to, you know, that time when there were lots of teams on the grid. As you correctly said, there was a lot of teams falling off the grid because there simply wasn't the money to support them.
That was great fun, though.
Well, it's not great fun if you've got a mortgage and
what if you're,
kids,
what if you're
and, you know,
a fan
you're
of the
an
team?
Engineer.
That's true. I didn't mean fun for the people.
Yeah. It's, you know, so I don't think you want to go back to those days. And then you have to ask, well, you know, what would one extra team add? Would it be significant? Would it make Sundays that bit more exciting? I don't know, but the Andretti package, I think, is as strong as you will find. So if there is at all an
it's
argument
going
for
to
a
be them.
Team, it should definitely be them, I think. So yeah, we'll see how it pans out, but I think you do have to be a little bit careful with the F1 ecosystem, especially as the 10 teams that exist were told basically, you know, you're entering a franchise model under the last Concorde agreement. You are going to be the 10 teams. We're going to bring the wealth up of everybody. You're going to have a budget cap imposed on you. And they all agreed on it because it was the business model they were signing up to. And now that business model is potentially changing.
And also just on that as well, one of the big bits of opposition to this is the anti-dilution fee Andretti would pay
right.
is $200 million.
There's that word.
Yeah, and great segue earlier with that, by the way. F1 team, that was agreed in 2020. F1 teams now feel that's massively undervalued for what the current teams are worth.
Absolutely.
I mean, Alpine, you know, given the investment they had this year, they feel the valuation of that team is around $900 million. Now, you know, the maths in that, you know, you could argue if it's how accurate that is. But that's clearly a lot more than $200 million. So the teams feel, hey, Andretti can't just come in here and spend that money and then suddenly have an asset that's worth nearly four
it's
times
a great
that.
Great investment.
Yeah. And one thing we heard a lot in Qatar as well from Gunther Steiner, from James Vowles. I mean, even Vasseur said it as well. You know, the Ferrari boss, he said, in COVID, a lot of teams were on their knees. They were nearly out of business. And they feel like they waded through the bad times of Formula One and they're now being rewarded with this great, you know, time that they've got. So you can understand where the Formula One teams are coming from, but as a fan, it's frustrating to see.
It's why you wore your sports hat. You talk Alpine, the big news this week for Alpine, some big names in sports.
From sports.
You wear the generic sports hat, you can just be a generic sports fan, but Patrick Mahomes, Kansas City Chiefs, Travis Kelce, who some of you may know as Taylor Swift's
other half,
interest. Rory McIlroy, big names on your side of the pond.
What does this mean? Is Travis Kelce putting Alpine on the map? Travis, Taylor Swift put him on the map, and now is he putting Alpine on the map? I don't know
how
that
works.
So
what you're saying is that Taylor Swift may be in the Alpine seat next
year. I mean,
year.
All she needs to do is turn up in the paddock, and suddenly Alpine's everyone's favorite team.
Oh, wow, would that be something?
Yeah.
Did the Chiefs play this week? I think they're on their bye, aren't they?
No, they're not. Well, I hope not, because I've got Kelce in my fantasy team, currently in the tight end position.
That would be something, a Kelce Swift sighting on the grid.
Well, you'd have
Grundle get the interview?
Several million more Alpine fans overnight suddenly, so maybe that's not the worst idea.
But you know, it just goes to the point of there's so much attention on our sport right now, and it's a good thing, but it's that fine line, that balance between sustainability and growth. To your point as well, those teams that have weathered the storm, that have been there through the darker days. But I think to the point that we made with the drivers, you'd love to see more drivers, more opportunity, a woman driver on the grid. We've seen Aston Martin go out there and you know, and it's there is so much talent out there that I think on the sum, it's going to be a good thing. Another team with more drivers.
When Lewis made that point in Qatar as well, and then he kind of backtracked because he said, I wasn't supporting Andretti's bid. I was supporting the concept of 11th team and two extra seats, like you said.
The abstract.
There is that. But at the same time, you know, if there is a female driver who's the right driver, hopefully it doesn't need an extra two seats. If the right female is there, it should be that she gets a whether it's 20 seats, 18 seats, 16 seats, you'd hope that she'd get it on merit at this point anyway, right? So that could be a counter argument against that, but yeah, we'll see. I mean, it doesn't seem like it's going to happen, unfortunately, at the moment. Just on the growth of Formula One, my one fear with Andretti, if they get rejected and let's say this boom period ends quite quickly, you do worry, are Formula One going to be able to entice a General Motors and a Cadillac in 4, 5,
Now's
6 years' time.
Yeah.
So sometimes, you know, what's the phrase? You make hay while the sun's shining. You know, there is part of that. I think that's right. I don't know if I've butchered that old saying. But so, you know, you've got to consider that, because 5 years down the line, it might be that those companies are looking at F1 being like, actually, we don't want to get involved.
Stronger brands, the bigger names you bring in, if you are to weather, you know, any, obviously the growth, is it sustainable, but it makes you better for the long run.
Mm. Above all else, the sport has to be competitive, and that's the one thing it's not at the moment.
Yep.
I think, you know, that is the biggest thing. And would Andretti come in and compete with Red Bull? Would they do any better job than anybody else? No. So the problem F1 has to solve right now, at least I don't think they would, unless they have something very special up their sleeve. The problem F1 needs to face right now is how you make sure you have competitive seasons. Because, you know, fans just, when you've got 24 races in a year, we've got next year, if Max has won it again with six races remaining, it's just, you know, it's just not worth tuning in. No one wants to tune in when they know the result already. So we can, you know, we do all this window dressing, talk about all this kind of stuff, but that's the biggest thing F1 needs to address. And if it can address that, then there is absolutely space for more teams and everything, because you can bring in more competition. But it needs to find a way of tightening the competitive order in slightly. And my concern is that what gave us this situation we have now was a big regulation change in 2022. Well, guess what? The next big thing on the horizon in F1 is 2026, big regulation change. So you could have, you know, the tables turn maybe, but still a team ahead. So I think that's what F1 fundamentally needs to address if it's going to continue to grow and be able to sustain, you know, whatever it be, an 11th team, hopefully a female driver at some
point. There's a word for that here on this side of the pond. You see it in the NFL, see it in the NBA. We talk parity. There's so many ways that they seek to have parity to get teams close to one another, to try to put some semblance of competitive balance. But also sports fans do like domination. And to your, you know, your top level F1 fan, maybe right now, if you're new on the American side, yes, you can look at it and say, well, it's Red Bull dominance, why do I want to watch again? But there are so many great storylines for the remainder of this year once you take off that top layer, which obviously is impossible to do. Max Verstappen's dominance, winning every race. He's now going to break the record for laps led. But storylines for the remainder of the year. We said 5 races left, including this weekend. What for both of y'all is the biggest storyline remaining to be determined for this season?
I would still say that I think we've touched on the Perez situation. I'd say that's big. And it all hinges around that second position of the championship. But on that, you're right, there are storylines away from the top. But I do wonder how many fans actually find that interesting. You know, you win.
They
a
should.
Lot of fans.
It's great. It's a great season.
They should
take
but
out
also,
Max, and it would be one of the best seasons ever.
Problem is, you can't take Max out. That's
no,
the
you
issue.
Cannot.
You know, and I think, you know, a lot of fans came in on the Netflix hype. They saw an incredible first season in 2021. A lot of people, and F1 hasn't quite lived up to that. So I agree with what Lawrence said. I'd say the biggest story is Perez, Andretti, and whatever random investigation the FIA opens up this week into Lewis or someone
walking
else.
Across the track.
Walking across the track, something backwards.
The wrong type of shoes.
Lewis should just start doing that at every race, just parking up and walking across the track, I think. But I'll leave it with Lawrence.
Story
for the
line, biggest storyline.
Oh, no, I mean, Nate Stolnell, wasn't he?
But, sorry, I just said 3. You asked me for 1. Yeah. I do this on the pod all the time. Katie will ask me a question. I'm like, well, it's probably one of these 10 things.
Yeah.
Lawrence has got nothing left.
But Andretti, I think, is big, because there's a big political power game between the FIA and Formula 1 as well. So if you are interested in, you know, if you are interested in sports politics, you know, F1 is fantastic, and it is abundant with these great stories. But I think for a lot of people, you know, if you tune in on Sunday, it's quite hard to get your head around the history of the FIA and Formula 1 and who owns what and when the lease expires that F1 has on commercial rights. You know, I mean, you have to get into the weeds a bit, and I think that's
the drama.
There's drama there, but you have to go looking for it. And I think a lot of people would just rather have a straight-up fight, wheel-to-wheel racing, like we had in 2021. That was exactly what F1 should be about.
So will we see any of that this weekend? Let's do predictions for the race here. Max Verstappen would be going for a career 50th win if he can secure a victory here in Austin. What do you guys see happening at COTA?
I see him doing it. I mean, our predictions have become quite routine at this point. We just say Max every week.
Okay, so who? Max wins. I think we can all agree that Max wins. Who finishes second?
I think Lando.
Wow. So no Checo.
No Checo. And I'm going to be controversial and put Lewis third. I think Perez is done. I think he's, you know, cooked. I'd love to see him on the podium. Don't think it's going to happen. So I would say Max, Lando, Lewis.
I don't think that's controversial at all.
No,
that's
true.
Very similar to what I was talking about. I'm going to mix up a bit because I think we didn't quite see what Mercedes had to offer in Qatar. Obviously, McLaren's
collided on the first leg.
Into each other. And then what we did see of George coming back through the field was actually mighty impressive.
Yeah, that's true.
So, I feel like, all right, just to mix it up a tiny bit, I'll go for George Russell second and Piastri third.
Nice. Who's first? Who's first for you?
Well, yeah. I've got to think about it right now. Max is down for this.
Give me Max, Checo, Lando.
Okay. Nice. Yeah, the Checo. I think Checo,
I just think he's experienced enough. I'm going to give him the benefit of the doubt. I think he can tap into that and the energy here, knowing that, hey, whether he retires or not, these next 2 weeks can be a big part of his legacy. And if he wants to retire and he says, I'm done with this, he's a family man, I get second. You could ride out into the sunset. Take your check that Helmut Marko's going to sign. Watch him sign it and move on.
Just so we're clear, because a few weeks ago, Lawrence missed out.
Oh, yes.
I think you made his predictions.
Yes.
Yours are now for Katie. So we're going to make that that's executive call.
Yeah.
We're happy with that?
So yeah. Katie will be in, I think, later tonight. So
yeah. Well, we'll see if she agrees with you, first of all. But I think that's a solid pit.
Yeah, she will jump in, and we'll have tons of coverage for the USGP here at COTA, here in a beautiful, sunny Austin, Texas. The weather's been amazing.
You guys are
going to enjoy yourselves, aren't you?
Yeah. So I joke there's a certain temperature I call Nate weather, and we're just above it at the moment. So I'm going to struggle a little bit. But no, Austin's great for the weather. It's awesome.
Yeah, so we're going to enjoy ourselves. Make sure, stay tuned to all of ESPN, our digital channels, social channels as well, so you can get plenty of information. Guys, any final thoughts before I send it out?
No, just repping Austin, repping sports, loving it. Lawrence, anything more?
Yeah, tune in. It's a great race, no matter what. Like, even if Max is some way down the road, you'll see some good racing further back. So,
weather's going to be beautiful. So.
And a sprint weekend as well.
Plenty of action that we get on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. So keep it locked with us. We'll go get ourselves ready for the COTA Tower. Lawrence, Nate, Tyler, thanks so much for joining us. We will see you later this weekend.